the Festival One podcast. Kia ora, my name is Renee and welcome. Every year at Festival, we have a keynote speaker discuss the festival theme. For 2021, we changed things up a little because, you know, we didn't have enough change as it was in 2020. So yeah, we were just like, let's throw on a little bit more change. Cool. We had two keynote speakers dive deep into the theme of soon. We had Mick Duncan and Strawn Coleman take up the challenge. This episode is number two of Mick's sessions. So if you missed the first session, I'd suggest you pause this episode and go back one to hear a brief overview of who Mick is, what he does, etc., etc., as this seminar is a follow-on from his Saturday session and discussion on the theme. Next week, we'll introduce Strawn and his seminar on the theme as well. Thanks for listening, and we really hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, friends. Do you want to stand up and give the person next to you a hug? Have a stretch. Okay, you don't need to overdo it. Grab a seat. Here we go. Thank you so much for coming back. I have to share on something that is mysterious and serious, and it's not easy to do. So I pray that you just stick with me. But I want to start off with a story, and it goes like this. It's a true story, and there was this lady, she's a doctor, and her name is Mary Neal, and she's a spine surgeon. And not only is she a surgeon, but she is a kayaker, and she loves to do white water rapid kayaking, you know, in the fast lane. And so there was one particular day, and she was in the kayak, and she was doing, you know, this white water stuff, and her kayak went over a rapid, and it went down a steep kind of part of the rapid, and then the next scene was that the tip of her kayak, it got pinned between two boulders, and she was completely submerged under the water. And she had been professionally trained, she knew what to do, but no matter what she did to try and get out of that situation, it didn't work. And she knew that she was losing time. And so what she did was that she prayed to her God, and she prayed for her children, and then she sort of let go. And you sort of wonder what happened next. Well, the way she tells it, what happened next was she saw herself being pulled out of the boat. Next scene, she saw her spirit being peeled from her body. Next scene, she was being welcomed by angelic beings and human beings on a pathway. And they came towards her, and they just were so rapt to see her. Next scene, they were asking her to follow them. So she started to walk towards an archway on this pathway. Next scene, she looked back and she could see her body on the shore beside the river, and there was someone who was doing CPR with her body. And she said to her body, "Thank you for the ride. It was really good." And then she turned and she started to walk towards the archway. And as she got to the archway, she peered inside, and she saw all of these angelic beings and human beings. And it looked so good. And she just wanted to leap inside. But as she was about to leap inside, the angels and the human beings, they said to her, "Your time is not now. You need to go back to Earth. You have more work to do." And so the next scene for her was she was coming back to life beside the river on Earth. Now that my friends, is a mysterious but serious story. And so I have a question, and the question goes like this. I mean, what do you think happens when you die? I mean, have you ever thought about death and dying? Have you ever had someone close to you die? I mean, I had a brother, and when he was the age of 15, he was involved in a motorbike accident. And on that particular day, he didn't have a helmet on. And someone stormed through in a car through a red light and just smacked into his 15-year-old body. And he was reduced to a coma, and eventually he died. And when he died, you know, you're left wondering, what happens when you die? I lost a son. My son, he contracted a virus. We live in the day of a virus. Well, my son got a virus, and he died of that virus. And you know, you're left wondering, you know, what is death and dying, and what is the afterlife like? These are serious questions. And I think only an expert can answer these questions. And in my view, the expert on death and dying and the afterlife is Jesus Christ. He is the expert because he's been there and he's done it. For example, in John 19, we are told that Jesus was dying. I mean, literally dying. And he was dying on a cross. And then he turned to the person next to him who was also dying on the cross. And Jesus said to him, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And then Jesus died. He really, literally died. And then what happened next? We're told that Jesus went to the waiting place of the dead. And the waiting place of the dead has two parts to it. And in one part, it's for those who wanted to have nothing to do with God and the things of God. But there is this other part in the waiting place of the dead, and that part is called paradise. And that part consists of those people who wanted to have everything to do with God and the things of God. And that is where Jesus went. And then we're told that several days later, Jesus left that place and he returned to earth. In other words, he came back to earth as a physical human being. This is the first time that that had ever happened in human history, and it happened in the middle of history. I mean, Mary, who I told you about, the spine surgeon, she was resuscitated, but Jesus, he was resurrected. That had never happened before and since in human history. And Jesus returned to earth from the place of the dead as a physical human being. I mean, people could touch him, people could hug him. He talked to people. I mean, we're told in 1 Corinthians 15 that over 500 people gathered around him at one particular time. And we're also told in John chapter 21 that he put on a Barbie. He put on a Barbie for his mates. I mean, he physically returned. And then we're told that this Jesus, he then ascended into heaven. And he took with him all of those who were in paradise. All of those who wanted everything to do with God and the things of God. And they ascended with him such that now heaven is populated by angelic beings and human beings. And that is what Mary saw. As she looked in through the archway, she could see all of these angelic beings and human beings. And that is what heaven is populated by. And we're told this in Hebrews chapter 12, that heaven now is populated by angelic beings and human beings. But that is not their final destination. That is not their final destination. So I have another question for you. And it goes like this. When you die, or when I die, I turned 65 last year. So maybe my death is closer than yours. But when you die and I die, especially if you are a disciple of Jesus, what happens to you? Well, we're told in Philippians chapter 1, verse 23, that you go to be with Jesus in heaven. And when you go to be with Jesus in heaven, I mean, you will be conscious, you will be refreshed, and you will be safe. But that is not your final destination. So you sort of wonder, what then will be our final destination? So then we're told that this Jesus is going to return, and he's going to return physically to this planet. He's going to physically return to this earth. And when this Jesus returns, we are also told that every single person who will be living on this planet at that time will see his return. We're told that in Revelation 3 and Revelation 22. And you know, I always wondered, you know, how does that work? I mean, just for argument's sake, if Jesus, I don't know, if he touched down in South Auckland. I mean, how will we in Hamilton get to see him? How will people in Japan get to see him? And then I realized, I came to discover that heaven and earth, watch my hands, heaven and earth are parallel dimensions. Heaven is not up there and we're down there. This is not an upstairs, downstairs. Heaven and earth are parallel dimensions, and heaven surrounds the globe. Heaven is as close as heaven can be to earth, this dimension, and heaven surrounds the globe. And when Jesus, and between these two dimensions, currently there is a curtain. So we can't see into heaven. But when Jesus returns, this curtain will be lifted. And we will see Jesus as he is, where he is. And we will see the beings. And we will see the human beings. We will see his appearing. So what happens next upon his return? What happens next? There will be judgment. Now, at this point, some people say, oh, okay, Mick, here comes the bad news. No, people, judgment is good news. Have you ever heard someone in your circles, a friend, who has said something like this? You know, I wish all the crying would stop. I wish all the fighting would stop. I wish all the hating would stop. I wish all the fighting would stop. I wish someone would do something about it. Well, when Jesus returns, Jesus will say, it stops here and now. No more hating, no more fighting, no more criticizing, no more sexism, no more racism, no more wars, no more inequality, no more damage to the planet. It stops here and now. That has got to be my friend's good news. But then Jesus will turn to all those people who consciously and defiantly wanted to have nothing to do with God and the things of God. And he will judge them. And at this point, people say, oh, here comes the mean, nasty, bullying, judgmental God. It doesn't work that way. Jesus will turn to those who consciously, defiantly spurned his love. And he will say something like this. He will say, while you were living, you wanted to have nothing to do with me. Before your death, you wanted to have nothing to do with me. So now, after your death, I am not going to force my presence upon you. Those are not the words of a bully. I respect your decision, even though it saddens me. Before your death, you wanted to have nothing to do with me. So now, after your death, I will not force my presence upon you. So now you will go to the place of the dead and you will live there forever. And then this Jesus will turn to the Christians, those that wanted to have everything to do with God and the things of God. And Jesus will turn to them and he will say, so tell me your discipleship stories. Tell me your discipleship stories. Tell me how you lived your life as a disciple. And there'll be some disciples at that point, and they'll be high-fiving all over the place because they're so getting off on great stories on how they were disciples. And Jesus will be high-fiving as well. But there will be other Christians, and we're told this in 1 Corinthians, who at that return of Jesus, they will experience Jesus' return as pain, because they will realize as Christians, when they lived their one life that was given to them, they lived overly casual and overly careless as Christians. And they did not write stories, discipleship stories. And they will struggle to meet Jesus in the eye. And those Christians will be Christians who will be embarrassed at the return of Jesus. And I want to say to you, dear people, may it be that you are not numbered amongst them. May it be, people, that you do not live a casual, careless life as a Christian. But rather, when you leave Festival One, you go write discipleship stories with your life. And then what happens next? We're told in 1 Corinthians 15 that Jesus will turn to all Christians, all disciples, and he would say, I've got a gift for you. I've got the gift of a new mind. I've got the gift of a risen self. I've got a gift, the gift of a new body. And we will receive a new body. And by the way, there will be some similarities with the body that you currently have. I mean, I have quite a big nose. I don't know if you've noticed. And you'll be able to recognize me on that day. And maybe some of you will think, I never thought you'd make it, Mick. But you will see this nose of mine. And I will recognize some of you. Our bodies will be in part similar, in part dissimilar. And why do we need a new body? We will receive a new body that will enable us to live here forever. There will be a new earth and a new heaven. Not a different earth, but a new earth here. And we will live here forever. And you say, what will we do? We will work here on this planet. And we will work and do stuff that we absolutely enjoy, and we will live a lifestyle that we will love. I mean, if I asked you to imagine your perfect day and your perfect life, and then I asked you to multiply that by a huge number, the result that you get from that math will not even come close to what it's going to be like to live here forever. When Graham asked me to come and share with you, and with this I'm just about done, When Graham came and he asked me, I said, what is the age group? And he said, well, most of the people will be between, you know, maybe 16 and maybe 26. Here's the research, people. A large percentage of that age group between 16 and 26, they leave church. They de-church. In some places, it's as high as 80%. And you sort of, I don't know about you, you sort of think, now I wonder why that is. Well, you see, in some churches, and I'm not wanting to be unkind, in some churches, the gospel that they hear is, you know, as a Christian, become a nice person, you know, get training, turn up to church as often as you can, you know, maybe meet a nice partner, and if you have kids, may they be well behaved, and save your money and return and save up for retirement. And in some churches, that is the gospel that you hear. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds lame. That sounds boring. I mean, Jesus didn't even live like that. So if that's the gospel that you hear, I can completely understand why you would leave church between the ages of 16 and 26. I mean, Jesus did not live like that. And I have not sought to live like that. I mean, when I read and look at Jesus, I mean, Jesus, he got alongside people that everybody else disliked. I mean, where Jesus saw wrong, he tried to put it to right. I mean, when Jesus saw evil, he entered into the fray and fought. I mean, he lived a reckless life. And I, when I saw Jesus, I thought, I want to have a reckless love affair with my Jesus. I want to have a reckless love affair with life as well. And so for me, I mean, Ruby and I with our kids, we went and lived in the slums of Manila. And we lived in a plywood shack. And we lived there for 10 years. And that's where we lost our son, because a virus invaded his little body and he died. I mean, but we thought, there is poverty and inequality and we're going to fight against that. I mean, there's a time when in South Auckland, you know, Ruby and I, while I was a Baptist pastor in Manurewa, you know, we rented out a big house and we took all manner of people in. People, it was bloody hard. Forgive the French, but it was hard. But it's writing a discipleship story. You know, currently, right now, I'm a part, you know, in a very small way, I'm a part of a movement. And we are wanting in March to get about 50,000 plus signatories to try and get across the line a piece of legislation in our parliament that will legislate against contemporary slavery. And we want to hold companies and hold businesses accountable to their supply chains. And we want to have mechanisms in place where we can call out that kind of injustice. And by the way, that movement that I'm a part of is World Vision. And I'm on their national board. But I think that who's not to want to do this stuff, people? Who's not to want to be a fighter? Who's not to want to be on the streets? Who's not want to do this? This is writing a discipleship story with your life. Don't settle for being casual, careless Christians. This is the last time you'll possibly hear from me. And I'm calling you out to become disciples. And this is serious stuff. People, look, hear me. Don't waste your life. And don't waste your death. Become a full-on, to the max, disciple. And if you become that disciple, you will experience a quality of life before you die, and you will also enjoy a quality of life after you die. And when Jesus returns, you will be ready. Do you want it? It's the best thing in town. Catch ya. See ya.
Music, art, and community. Whakangaho kotahi. Visit us at festival.one.